Hit record, people enjoy. Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell. We are doing our last of the year monthly Q&A series. We've got two ladies with us right now. I've got 30 signed up, so I'll keep an eye watching for other people coming in. Deidre was going to host this one for tips for starting home birth practice, but as we are a team and pivot and adapt as midwives, I'm Leslie Cornwell. I run midwifery business consultations. So Kayla and Dr. Crystal Settle had joined us. I know Kayla quite well. She's a very successful home birth midwife in Iowa. One's been working with our team. And then Dr. Crystal Settle is thinking about opening a home birth practice near the Georgia Florida line. So we were just talking before we started hitting record. I think some of the common things that people like to start off with when we do these Q&As are pain points, struggles, challenges, things that they wish somebody else would have told them before they started their practice. I know with Dr. Crystal, you have the advantage. You're not in the thick of seeing clients right now versus Kayla has more of like, how do I improve? How do I take it to the next level? When you're starting any business, it's easier to plan, then you're in the thick of it and now you're struggling and now you didn't do something because you've got to have side by side taking care of people on top of planning your business. Not saying it's impossible, it's just harder. But a common pain point, people don't have enough business education. They don't have enough of a sense of how do successful businesses run. I know I love being a midwife, but I am one person, and sometimes people take too much of their time and their effort to do something versus planning and creating a system. So, a lot of midwives will be solo and they'll do everything themselves. And then you get into these busier pain points where now you want to train someone, now you want to create a system, and it's too busy to do them side by side. So, even if you don't plan on having an office manager or a receptionist or a partner from day one, plan like you're eventually going to get one in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, because now you have the time on your side to make the training, to make the system that you guys can utilize together. If you ask someone to back you up, you want to train a birth assistant, have your kind of core setup of implementing somebody on the train team, your mission, your vision, how to answer a phone, how to do supplies, how to order something, take care of clients. These little things that I think so many midwives take for granted that are all in their head. And then by the time they want to grow and expand as a team or collaborate, they now have to have the time to put all that stuff in their head on paper. So if you can get in the habit of always slowly making those systems, it'll help. The nice thing with a home birth practice compared to other business structures is the overhead cost is pretty much the least amount. Telehealth is a little bit cheaper because you don't have really the supplies you need for birth. But on average, a home birth practice can get started very successfully with 10,000, 15,000 of supplies. And honestly, a good chunk of those supplies you need by the birth time. I would say probably 8, 10 grand. And Kayla, if you have suggestions of different numbers or thoughts of how you've done it. Most people will just get the bare bones to do prenatal visits. And then as they start doing care, they make sure they have all their birth supplies by 32, 36 weeks so they can use the revenue from getting started to buy a good chunk of the stuff. We have a lot of consulting clients that we teach to use like credit cards, like a new business credit card on average from like Chase Bank, you'll get 0% interest for 12 months. And it's usually $15,000, $20,000. It is based on your personal guarantee. So obviously, if you have a crappier credit score, you're not going to get as much as someone that has a better credit score. But these are little simple stepping stones when you don't need a lot of money to get started and a low overhead. And I always preface it, I'm not an accountant, a lawyer, a financial planner, but I'm giving high strategy of examples for people to utilize because everybody's situation is different. But I think those are common things people talk. Well, I'm struggling at my job. I don't like my job. I'm a new graduate. I want to start this practice. Where do I get the money? How do you plan this? There's a lot of layers with planning. So we usually start with, let's talk about if you're going to prep to open, what do you need? How do you market people? How do you want to take care of them? Think of every stage of the practice. And then you're going to make a roadmap that you just slowly go through, checklist, checklist every week. You're going to figure out, I have to do this before I can do this. So business structures, getting with the state, knowing your regulations really well. So for your home birth practice, if you're a state line, should I just serve in one state? Should I serve in both states? Should I serve why? Doing a good community analysis. Because sometimes it's a catch-22. People are like, well, I don't know how much to charge because I don't know my overhead and I don't know how much people are willing to pay. That's where you have to do your research. You have to do some surveys. You have to figure out what the other practices in the area are charging just to get a sense of the high and low range. And then once you start plugging in your budget and you start figuring out, this is how much I want to make, this is the benefits, this is how much for supplies, this is how much for marketing, I'm going to have a building versus my vehicle, you'll start getting a good sense of the fee schedule once you make a customized business budget at that stage of the planning. But yeah, as far as like marketing, if you're small and simple and there's already huge demands, I always stress to people, you're not so much marketing just to get a client. We're trying to market and get people attracted to you that are your dream clients. Because that's a huge part of the burnout, in my opinion, especially with home birth practices. They're just trying to get a number on their delivery list. They're a good candidate for a midwife, but maybe they're not a good candidate for you based on your philosophy and your beliefs and your service radius and who you want to serve. There are tons and tons of people out there to serve. We are the ones in demand right now. As soon as you open your doors, I want you guys to be very selective of who you're going to take and how you're going to determine. Obviously, I don't want you to discriminate. So it's going to be objective, consistent things. You're not going to say, well, my delivery list is full. And then all of a sudden your girlfriend calls you and accept them. You have to have, because we are healthcare providers. So you have to be careful with when you make decisions for the practice, you have to be consistent throughout. Is there anything specific either of you ladies were really hoping we would talk about today or focus on or just listen to me rant for an hour?
I think I have a question about, I don't think I'm quite there yet. But at what point is it average to have an office assistant, like to do labs and emails and appointments? I mean, at what point is, and I know that's going to vary person to person, but I guess like, I know there's a benefit to it, but it also seems a little bit daunting because I know my system and I know it's going to get done right. And to hand that over is really scary. So at what point are you seeing people hand that over?
So there's two layers to it. There's the emotional side to it and there's the objective side. So there's going to be eventually a point you're just too busy and you have to have somebody. I think many practices hire when they have to, and now you're struggling to train them. It happens with midwives. It happens with staff. You should be hiring them when you're just thinking about it, because you've got to plan 3 months of training, 1 to 3 months, depending on their skills. You got to recruit, you got to get the right person. You have to be thinking ahead. When I get to that 100% capacity of having someone part-time per diem doing XYZ on my team, I want them, this is the stage I want them to be full-time turnkey ready to go with me. I think too many times we think of like, I'm going to get a partner because I'm too busy. I have the workload of two midwives, but then you've got 6 months of training, recruiting, and then you're in that pain point of burnout. I think we need to be, my personal opinion is I feel like every home birth practice and every practice should have at least one admin from the beginning. The only times is if you're like two or three people a month, very slow starting out. Usually when people hit pretty consistently 4 to 5 a month is when I'm pushing, like, you really should look the numbers to give yourself life back of 3 to 5 hours every week. The hard part, I think, is that mental shift. Many home birth midwives have never hired staff before. So on top of a learning curve of hiring an office manager, a receptionist, a partner, you have to go through the learning curve of hiring your first staff. And I think that's part of the hesitancy a lot of home birth midwives have, because interviewing is a skill. Required paperwork. W-2 employees are totally different than 1099 with your birth assistant. So there's layers of training and learning. I don't want any midwife to be rushing to get a body to fill her needs because she's struggling and she's just urgently trying to do it. versus, you know, I really, it's the new year. I've saved in a budget. I've got some cushion for training. I know my volume for 2024. I really want to spend the next 2 months training somebody, recruiting, looking for that right person. Just because you put a job posting out doesn't mean you have to hire somebody. It's just, and maybe they're just 3 hours from the beginning. And then they gradually build up with you. A lot of our home birth clients will look at their past clients they've served. Products of the product are the best employees ever. Because it is very difficult right now with work ethics and post-COVID staffing shortages. I have personally been struggling with our birth center opening in Detroit. I have done hundreds and hundreds of interviews and applicants for office manager, receptionist, and it's overwhelming and daunting. It very much is. So, I mean, you, especially Kayla, you'll have the advantage of you've got an established community, a reputation. Put a mass email out to your clients and say, hey, I'm looking for a mom. Either it's my own client or a friend of a friend or warm market that wants 5-6 hours of help. And then put in your job description, I want help with labs. I want help with transcribing things. I want help with some resource documents, improving systems. Give them some simple stuff that maybe is not so much in front of customers from the beginning, but still stuff you'd like to get done and helpful. And then you can gradually phase them up to being more in front of the customer's clients. Because I get it. You hire a receptionist, it's much more nerve-wracking where they're going to answer your phone and be your first impression than someone that's just like doing medical assisting or backdrop or even the birth assistant that comes in transitions. That's a totally different relationship and branding for you. So I get it. But also, if you don't want to burn out and you want to scale up and you want to grow a team and you want to be sustainable long term, we're going to have to be a little vulnerable with our practices.
Yeah, it's been shocking how much time administration stuff takes. It's I mean, people always said it, but you just don't get it till
you. Yeah, pretty much every hour you're in front of a person on average, you're still doing an hour of paperwork. Yeah. But you can improve those things. You can get systems. You can kind of condense things. Part of time management is like, because I think too many times midwives do it very scattered. And then it's not very efficient because it takes you a lot of time to dig into something. I would love to see home birth midwives doing visits like Tuesday and Thursday and admin Wednesday, and then leaving Friday for like a flex day, overflow day, and then trying to keep your weekends long, because obviously you're going to get it broken up and scattered by births and home visits. And if it's that weird weekend, nobody called you and needed you, you just got that rare 4-day weekend. So I'm trying for these midwives that are doing like 2 to 5 clients a month. If you can make your visits, maybe you do Wednesday, because some of the ladies are like, I do home visits. I was like, well, then do your clinic Tuesday, Thursday, do admin for 4-6 hours on Wednesday morning, and then do home visits Wednesday afternoon. Like, try to get yourself in a momentum and be very conscientious when you're going to do admin focused time. You've got a list, you've prioritized it, you focus, you've allotted the accurate amount of time to do those things. Because I think it takes way longer to just scattered, be like, oh, I'm going to do this. But then you got to dig into emails. You got to dig into conversations. You got to remember where you were at last versus I'm going to block 2 hours and I'm going to get this thing off my list. I'm going to block 30 minutes every day to check emails, to check patient portals, to just keep up on things before I start my day. So those are little habits that will help to get you in a routine and consistent. So you're not blindsided where someone calls you and you're like, I didn't see that message, so let me dig. And then you're behind on a client, or now you missed your lunch break because you didn't have that system in place.
And I will attest to that. That is true. In the first couple of months, I was kind of just scattering visits all over my week. And then I was like, this is crazy. I'm coming to clinic for 2 to 3 hours every day. Like, this is just, I don't like this. So I've done that. I do Tuesday and Thursday clinic. And then Monday I do any home visits I have. And then Wednesdays are like those flex days where I'm in the office getting stuff done and I have Fridays off. And I will say that like the flow of things have just improved greatly.
Yeah. I think when people start out, they're like, I will do anything. They want weekends. They want Saturdays. They want Tuesday at 2 because I want that client. Like that's that tension that's in us that if I tell her I have a structure, if I tell her what kind of midwife I want to be, she might not pick me. Like that's a lot of the fear that happens in consulting visits. And I could tell you pre-COVID, you probably could be a little more picky and flexible initially. The average it took for a new home birth practice to get busy used to be 2 years. Honest to goodness, now now, it's 2 months. Like, you have a waiting list by 2-3 months. If you've got the right marketing, you've got the right community, because you're absorbing the overflow of what everybody else can't do. So I want you guys to be picky. I mean, we are having a high burnout rate of midwives, particularly in the home birth setting, because you have a wide radius to serve. There's hard collaboration. What if people come at the same time? I just did 2 consulting meetings this week alone of people that have 2-3 hour deserts, and they're being begged to go to this Amish community and this Amish community. And we're trying to creatively make like birth houses and like set up structures so they can have a concrete stability to say, okay, instead of visiting this whole Amish community all day long, I'm going to come to this lady's house. I'm going to come to this birth house, and I'm going to see everybody in 2 hours versus it would have taken me 6-8 hours. Like, how can we give great midwifery care with the home birth radius is the challenge for home births. I love home births, but when we're in such a critical point for midwifery shortages, I'm pushing a lot more birth centers and low-key centralized care, even to do a clinic space a good chunk of the time versus 100% home visits. The time, even if you're like, well, I don't have to pay that rent, when you start calculating your mileage, your wear and tear on a vehicle, and your time between people, you've just cut out an average of 10, 12 hours a week just by people coming to you. Obviously, for the birth, you go to them for the birth. So I think we need to get very creative in this new age contemporary midwifery needs and demands and burnouts and shortages of how do we serve people well, but it's also I can be around for the long haul. I can make amazing midwives that aren't going to be burnout like me because I'm not teaching them bad habits of what is currently happening. So I think that's the art, particularly in the home birth setting. It's not just about starting the practice right, but also putting good boundaries. Like, there's professional boundaries of when to call me. This is what you can call in the daytime. This is what you can call for after hours. And how are you going to handle it if they do call you after hours for a silly question at 2 a.m. that could have easily waited till the next morning? How are you prep and script and be able to professionally handle those things before they occur? Because the clients are only going to do midwifery how you let them. Like, if you're saying, well, you can call me anytime, I'm okay, I'm here. Like, most midwives will say, I'm also a mom, I also have kiddos, I also do vacations. Like, we work as a team to take care of you. And midwifery model isn't just me, it's the support of midwifery. So it's really how you approach it to the clients. And if they want to be served by a more solo midwife, they usually have to pay more, and it's going to be more personalized boutique-y service. It just depends on what structure of a midwifery practice you want to do. I have home birth midwives literally take 1 client every 6 weeks in California, and they charge like crazy amount of monies, and that's okay. That's what she wants to do. She's near retirement. But then I also have other ladies that literally take 20, 25 births a month home birth, but they also have a really strong collaboration of other people in the area, and the clientele they're serving, like Amish Mennonites, they have a lot of babies, they don't call much. Like, you have to look at the community you're serving. And as long as it's sustainable for you, you've got boundaries. You get 1 weekend off because somebody's covering you. You have maybe your prenatal visits are stretched out a little bit, but you're still giving great, safe care. You have to look at your community. How do you want to serve them? And what's the norm? Are you pushing that a line of assembly line versus we're still giving good quality care? That's the art of all of this. Because, yeah, I know you know very well, Kayla, it doesn't matter if you have 2 due or 10 due, they can still call you at the same time. I've had it with my home birth practice. I mean, the more rural you are and the less collaboration you have, the higher the burnout rate is. So I always encourage home birth practices to have a student from the beginning, to have a student as much as you can. But you also have to, just like you structured your business, you have to structure a student program, a mini program. It's not the same with nurse midwives as it is with CPMs. CPMs are more of an apprenticeship and formal model. They're expecting that site to give a lot more autonomy of how the clinical experience will go versus like a nurse midwife. The hospital, the school system tends to structure it and say a little bit more handholding. So on top of, if you're considering a student, which I encourage every midwife to have, but you also have to be in a safe, healthy place to take a student. If we're just creating more burnout and more bad habits, and we have a very, very low turnover of actually midwives graduating. Like, I think it was, so I should say high turnover. I would estimate it's like 15-20% actually start CPM midwifery school, direct entry, community base, and actually finish. A lot of it is just the demands, the exhaustion. And I would love to see us do things differently. So when you're thinking of a home birth practice, what is your dream job and what is your dream community you want to serve? How do I structure it? How do I set it up? Maybe you need, like, the other thing that Kayla and a lot of our consulting clients we talk about is maybe you have a lower birth maternity care service side, but then you add ancillary services, you add other revenue to your home birth practice. It doesn't matter how big or small your practice is, that every midwife should have a building of some capacity, whether it's a community center, whether it's a clinic, whether it's a birth center, whether it's a women's health service line, because you can rent the other space. And now you get to surround yourself by who you want to be surrounded by versus whoever the landlord randomly puts next to you. There's a lot of tax deductions with having a building versus just renting. So a lot of the wealth, a lot of the successful midwives that are doing things right, it's very clear they own a building of some capacity with their practice. There's a very different line of success because you've got other revenue, you've got other deductions that can take from your profits that you're getting. That's part of that business. So I think having a building, whether it's big or small, I mean, if you have to the first 6-12 months, do home visits, do rent, do it, but have a budget, have a plan that when you can, especially with the upcoming economic trends, I think commercial properties are going to get really, really cheap across the country. And so having a budget, having a stipend emergency plan cushion that you're like, okay, I'm going to save up X amount for a down payment for a building, and I'm going to start watching for it 3 months, 6 months before my lease ends, knowing that's part of your stepping stone. It doesn't have to be it from day one. Those are clear things because it'll help to have a consistent place. You can do some visits there. The days you're not using it, you can rent it out to someone else. There's a lot of benefits to having. And it, honestly, it has a stronger presence to the community. When there's a building and a sign, I think so many home birth midwives are kind of hidden underground and you have to know the right people to find them. I want us to have a stronger presence. I want people talking more about midwifery. I want a building and a sign that's showing these amazing services versus you just knew the right person and people talk about this secret underground home birth community that are existing. I love Crystal's taking notes. It's awesome.
I'm writing like a thing.
I love it. Well, it's going to be recorded, so you can obviously see it a little later too, but I love the note taking. So anytime you start a business, it doesn't matter how big or small it is. It's a learning curve. I mean, the average midwife practitioner is not taught how to be a business owner. Never. Like, unless you have the right business mentor, you have someone in your family or some sort of connection, it's all hard knocks. And so we've been trying with Midwifery Business Consultation to be a more proactive approach, getting you resources, tools, templates to run a successful home birth, birth center, women's health clinic across the country. Home birth practices are desperately needed, but I think the big Achilles with them is they have a much higher burnout rate. Your travel radius, being very particular on who you serve and how you serve them. I think Kayla, I show this to you, that circle radius, like when there's a map system that when you're going to collaborate with other midwives, where is that overlapping circle radius and who can you call? Even your delivery list, like when you're thinking I have one lady left on my due date list, don't just think it's one lady anywhere. Be like, okay, I've got two other ladies that have had babies before. They go fast. They live up here an hour and a half from my office. I don't want anybody that's added to the due date list over here. Like, you need to be very strategic and proactive with your delivery list, not just saying a number. I'm going to take three. I'm going to take five. How many primips, how many multips, how many cash, Medicaid, insurance, how many ladies in a certain radius? Like, okay, I'm going to push the envelope this way. As soon as I push the envelope this way of my 3-hour radius, I'm not going to touch this for the next 5 weeks because it's not safe. Like, you have to think of those things. I think too many times the midwives, they're in front of the ladies, the emotions get high, they tell their sad birth story last time, and they just want to help them. But then 6 months later comes by and they're like, what did I just get myself into? This unnecessary anxiety and stress could have been prevented. Because especially when you have other amazing midwives in the area, you know, okay, I can't accept you down here, but my good friend Jill can, she has an opening and she can take great care of you because she's going to be that direction more that month. Like, wouldn't it be glorious to be able to say, I can't take you, but I know a better midwife based on your style and your goal. Like, this is why we need more students and we need more midwives.
Sure.
So what other things are burning needs and goals? I mean, we've got a lot, there's a lot with the learning curve of owning a home birth practice, but Kayla, if you want to give Crystal some like perspectives of why you've loved your practice and what you're grateful you've done or any learning curves you've thought of.
Yeah, I would say something I've been working on lately is like all my informed consent stuff. And I will say that the ones I bought from you really did help a lot. Midwifery Business Consultation has like generic forms that you can purchase. And it really helps just, even if I don't use exactly what's on that, it gives me a starting point that I can work with. And also like that I know I have to do, because like when you do, for me, I just came out of CNM school. And when you do clinicals in these hospitals, they don't do a lot of informed consent documents. I mean, they just don't. I mean, they don't do a lot of informed consent in general. And so even just like thinking about like, oh, like I want an informed consent document for that too, you know? And I just think that there's so many of, you know, much of that, that I didn't think about originally. So it's been a big learning curve to make all of those, but it has helped a lot having a template, you know, from Midwifery Business Consultation.
I appreciate the kind plug, Kayla. So, there's
a ton that you don't think about. I mean, there's so much paperwork that goes into it that.
Yeah. You got 90% of your work done. Like I literally say, when you spend $1,000, $1,500, you've saved 6 months of your life. And it's hard to Google search when you don't know what you don't know. There's like clauses and there's certain acronyms and there's certain verbiage that people like, we aren't lawyers. Like we don't know the billing and coding world. We don't know the legal world. So sometimes when we put it in our language, it doesn't compute to the court system. Like sometimes there's these barriers of what people will put in their agreements that I'm like, you actually need to have this, or you need to have it worded this way because it means totally different. Like it's just, so those are part of those accelerations, because especially the legal sense, home birth practices, private community practices, we're vulnerable to the medical system. So if push comes to shove, I can tell all the time of stupid board of nursing, board of midwifery complaints, accusations. We have to defend ourselves against the bigger system that we're not the norm. We're the outlier. So we have to overkill our quality. We have to overkill our standards that the hospital systems don't have to do.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Policies and procedures. It's very interesting across the country what people feel and think about them. I hear a lot of times, I don't want policies and protocols because they tell me what to do. I'm actually more of a liability risk if I have them. And I'm like, did a lawyer tell you that? Or like, is it just your friend telling you that? Like, let's talk about this. Because if you want to grow a team and you want to be sustainable, you have to have a certain standard. If the first thing, if you're ever put of an accusation of negligence or questioned care, they're going to ask to see your practice standard of care and your policies and procedures. That's the first question they're going to ask you. And as soon as you say you don't have them, usually you, like, there's a rarely hard time to defend to the jury and justify that you're a good caliber professional person, because that's part of standards of care to have them. But you can customize them. Like I stress over and over again, it's not, because I think in the hospital world, especially, they get the stigma of, I can't go outside of this. My malpractice won't cover me, or I may lose my job or get disciplined because I didn't follow ABC like a computer. These are guidelines. All you got to do is note in your documentation, I offered her the standard of care. I offered her a 20-week anatomy scan. I offered her GBS. I offered her diabetes screenings, and she declined them. Here's the risk and benefits. Here's the discussion, and then move on, versus you just don't talk about it, or you don't have a standard of how you present that. So those are things that, it does take a lot of work to set up a practice, the papers, the business, the entity, but anything that's any business is hard to get started. It's just new. You're not getting a job for a paycheck and they're doing all of that in the backdrops. You're creating your own dream practice. You get to create your own templates, tools, policies. You're not just handing out what someone else that you're working for is doing it for you. So there's a lot of benefits and autonomy with being your own private practice, but you are your bread and butter. So you have to be able to be very caliber. You have to have the right marketing campaigns. You have to know how to convert a consult visit into a client. What not to say, what to say, what questions to screen. There's an art to all of that. And so there is a learning curve. If you do have other people in your community already running a successful practice, I do encourage people mentor with them, or maybe you're a 1099 of them, maybe you're a birth assistant, particularly if it's someone that's like, I'm not as familiar with the home birth setting. I'm used to practicing in this setting or this style or this way. It's a good idea to just even dabble in testing with someone else's practice. Do I want to be a home birth midwife? Do I want to have this lifestyle that this person has? Versus you open the practice and 6 months into it, you're like, crap, I didn't know this was what it would be like. Because that happens often. We're so excited and we're so passionate. People jump in and they're planning as they're going. And then they didn't do that due diligence. What is the structure of a lifestyle of a home birth midwife? Maybe some people have really bad anxiety and being on call at the hospital is way better for them. Like, it's not a good or bad thing, but just knowing that ahead of time before you jump all in will save you a lot of headaches and time. The whole point of business planning is to do on paper and testing the water. Is this business a good idea for you to do? Versus you jump in and now your real life business planning in front of people, in front of the community, it's totally different.
I'm a huge planner. And so I think my fear is that I'm going to want everything in its perfect place before I'm willing to kind of step out there. Yeah. What is kind of an even ground to that thought process? Like, you know, business model, yes, fees, yes, supplies, yes, like all the logistics, but at what point would you say, yep, now you're ready to kind of start taking clients?
I know, because a lot of people will get into the analysis paralysis that they'll just think, I've got a plan, I've got a plan, and then they don't do anything. So I usually give a ratio of like 80-20 planning. Like, I want you to feel like you've got 80% of it figured out. Roughly, you know, I've got my business structure. I've got a sense of where I want to go from day one. I've got a sense, because you're going to continue to customize that plan while you're in the thick of it. You're never going to know everything. Maybe all the clients you didn't know that they wanted to be served this way, or that's a no-go, even though your research had shown XYZ, you know? So like, you're going to pivot as you're in the thick of it, but I want 80%, 70, 80% of the planning done. And then you start publicly advertising, then you start getting, and then when I'm saying 70, 80% of it done, running a turnkey solo practice with 2-3 birth assistants, you've got your consents, you've got your agreements, you've got your paperwork to take care of people from the beginning to the end. You've got a plan from their new OB to all the way to 6 weeks postpartum. You've got a game plan of how you're going to take care of them, your educational handouts. Even if you have a list of supplies, not saying the birth assistant, the birth supplies you have to buy from day one, because some of them expire, they're expensive. You've got the list of, when I hit my lady, my first lady, that's 32 weeks, I'm going to be buying these things. Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking of planning, like ordering supplies. It's not the planning side. Now you're executing your plan. Yeah. Those are great questions. Anything else, Kayla, you think you should add?
Can't think of anything right now.
Yeah. Well, I know Beth just joined us, and if Beth wants to say hello, she's more than happy to, or she could be a fly on the wall, whatever her preferences are. With a smaller group, I tend to do just kind of customized Q&A of what you guys are looking for. But if there's anything specific you'd like to learn about or some pain points you'd like to talk about, let us know.
Hi, I'm a certified nurse midwife and have been since 2009. I was hospital based for 12 years and have had my own home birth practice for 2.5 years. And yes, it's been 2.5 years, but you're still learning things. and I did not have a class like this before I started. And so I just kind of jumped in and have been flying by the seat of my pants since. Yeah. My biggest things with were not so much, of course, I was a very experienced midwife by that point, but was not so much of how do I get patients and manage them and, you know, those sorts of things. It was more of the you know, how do I file for a tax ID number? What are my taxes? How do those look like? Billing, it's still the bane of my existence. And insurance companies and all those sorts of things. Those were really the nuts and bolts. ICD-10 CPT codes, modifiers, all those things. And to be quite honest, I'm still struggling with some of that. I did wind up contracting with a professional biller who's a home birth mom herself, so she gets it. But it's still just a pain in the rear end trying to figure that stuff out, because we weren't taught that in midwifery school. Or I wasn't even taught that in nursing school.
It has nothing to do with like an all practitioners. No, none of the healthcare field is taught business. The average person is not taught business. We're taught conditionally to work for someone else's business. And so it's definitely a need to learn how to run a successful medical practice on top of running a successful midwifery practice, because we've got our own layers and nuances and inpatient versus outpatient versus small and private, when we're not the norm. Like, there's a lot of layers to what we're doing. So I started midwifery business consultation in 2017 because I had my own private practice. I had one for 4 years and I crashed and burned because I didn't understand the business either. I got too busy too fast and didn't, all the cracks in the foundation as I scaled up, I got past that honeymoon phase and I was like, crap, my butt's getting handed to me and I don't like this anymore. And so I started this with what I wish I would have had with my private practice, plus all the things I dove down, tax, business, finances, all these laws and regs and compliance things that are so important for midwifery to be sustainable on a private practice level. So we have a lot of amazing tools and courses. The intent of this Q&A is very high level, supporting what you guys have questions on, but we have on our website tons of online courses with lifetime access. There's a home birth course that teaches the business side. It teaches, like you're talking about, how do I consult? How do I set up paperwork? How do I, every stage of the planning pathway? And so everybody's learning style is different, but it's a lot. I mean, running a practice, but the example I always give is the first time you hear medical terminology, the first time you catch your first baby, you're overwhelmed. You're like, there's a lot to process. There's a lot of things to think of that first 20 minutes after the baby comes out. And then once you do it after a while, it kind of becomes second nature. And so when you're learning a new thought process, you're learning anything, it's overwhelming, but just listening to it over and over again. That's why we've got YouTube channels. We record these Q&As so people can hear it over and over again. Business education is a learning curve. And it, like you said, it's not just the business foundational side of the entities and the taxes and the legal and compliance. It's also, how do I talk to the clients? How do I put boundaries? What paperwork? What educational handouts? How do I collaborate with a physician in the area? How do I set up a collaboration with another midwife? I need standing orders in my state. I can practice independently. I'm supervised. Like, there's a lot of layers that when you're going through the planning pathway, you just check off, okay, I'm looking into the compliance stuff, because you want to start with the big stuff that may make or break with your planning. I didn't even know I want to do a home birth practice in my state and I can't, it's illegal, like whatever the situation. You have to decide, do I want to do a different practice type or do I want to move? Like, it doesn't do any good to think of how I'm going to take care of my client until you know you can actually do the type of practice you want to do in your area. So you've got to think of these high level make or break things, and then you start digging into. It's way easier as you're figuring out, Beth, to plan and think and structure ahead of time versus now we're in the thick of it. And I've got the clients and I've made the mistake. I'd rather make it one time on paper versus I've done it with 30 clients and now I've got to change things. And I got this confusion out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for certain. And I had some of that. Luckily, I had another home birth CNM who was about an hour from me that really helped me get things organized and together and shared a bunch of her paperwork. But of course there's going to be mistakes, and we all do those, and I even actually just changed my contract the other day to add a clause about missing a birth. We're constantly changing things and updating things. That's probably one of my biggest pet peeves about midwifery in general, is that every state is so different, and the licensing laws, and if there is even is licensing opportunities for non-nurse midwives, and then what those regs look like, and then what those really barriers to practice are for midwifery, and who can carry what medwise, and there really just needs to be a more unified system. And I think a lot of midwives that are trying to open a private practice, whether that would be a home birth practice or a birth center or something like that, would be so much easier if it was, you know, the same throughout the country. Yeah. Or at least somewhat similar. I mean, we've got, it's ridiculous, just the variation among the states.
Yeah. Well, and as you start learning internationally, like Australia is 1,000 times easier. I've done locum midwifery as a nurse midwife the last 6 years. And depending on if it's a government facility, they'll accept any license. But then if you want to go help somewhere else, it's on average 2 to 3 months, even if you're locum filling in, because you got to get the state license, you got to get the nursing license, then you got to get the midwifery license, then you got to get insurance credentialing. It's set up purposely in the U.S. There's a lot of AMA movement, the American Medical Association, because it's a restriction of trade. Like, if they can make the competitors already hurt themselves because there's 20 steps, like, doctors don't have to go through nearly the hoops that we have to go through. CRNAs, nurse anesthetists, don't have to go through nearly the hoops we have to go through. The more they're kind of playing nice and want to participate with the medical traditional system, the more the rules are set up in their favor. So yes, we need more people lobbying and understanding this. I know there's a lot of people pushing to get like a unified midwifery front, where it's more of a public health perspective versus a nursing. I think when we went that branching direction of adding to nursing, it actually hurt a lot of us versus just a unified midwifery front. Because most other countries like Canada and many parts of Europe, you start out as in medical school, nursing school, midwifery, all the same pathway, and then people kind of spread out from that. You see hospital, birth center, home, you see all these things, and then you join out versus we're in these silos. We've got medical, we got nursing, we've got midwifery. And it's making it hard for us as a society with our healthcare to collaborate as well. So it's definitely, we've got some struggles with our bigger medical system. And then, like you said, on top of midwifery, there's many educational pathways, and then there's 50 regs. Like, few people know what midwives are, and then few midwives can actually clearly explain all the different pathways. So there's definitely some layers that it's, I think it's been made that way to make it harder to expand access to midwifery. But I think more private practices, more awareness, more cohesive fronts of bringing everybody up together will be huge.
Oh, I agree 100%.
Yeah.
The nurse midwives in the group know that ACNM is kind of a hot mess right now. And so I would have loved to see ACNM, well, I've said this for, I don't know how long have I been involved with them, since 2007, to become like a national midwifery organization and just have all midwives, because I think that's really the way we need to go. Yeah. But that's another topic for a different day.
Yeah. We need more unification. If it's I am under the impression the new young blood, because I think a lot of these national, international organizations are quite disconnected of what the grassroots on the ground midwives need, in my opinion. I think we need more of many organizations coming up across the country and making like a coalition and a new regional rep, community-based midwifery alliance. I don't know. Some sort of like stepping stone of, we're bringing ourselves up based on our cohesiveness, our collaboration, our new paradigm shifts. Like we need the next generation to see that nurse midwives and CPMs and CMs and LMs and DAMs, they're all midwives. They just all have different little skill sets outside of their scope of practice, but we're all midwives. Like, it's not that paradigm shift yet.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I have talked to a few other fellows about getting together to kind of maybe even present that, to say, hey, like, yes, the new blood is thinking differently than we did, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. And now I think us old ladies need to throw our support behind that too. And I think if the fellows kind of got behind that, maybe at least I have visions of grandeur that it may do something.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's hard. I mean, it's unusual. I think maybe part of our following, because I'm a nurse midwife, I tend to have a little more of a nurse midwife community-based following, but there are other consultants that are more of the CPM following. And how do we get unification? How do we get where there are more resources to get us together at the table? Because a lot of places across the country, very few nurse midwives do out of hospital, or very few CPMs and LMs actually are in birth centers or actually collaborate with the hospitals. Like, we have so much disconnect among all the settings and the service lines. But I think home birth practices are desperately needed. I stress over and over again, because of the current climate and the massive demands, I would encourage people to start out with a partner from day one, whether it's a student that's close to graduating, or because in 6 to 12 months, you're going to burn out pretty quickly because you're it serving a large radius by yourself. So the demands are high now, and I have been trying to push with our home birth structure, whether it's a business partnership, it's two new practices side by side starting, because there's a lot of pressure from like an established home birth practice or new home birth practice paying that person till the volume hits the needs for them. But by the time it hits the needs for them, you should have already had them boots on the ground versus they're in the training phase. So that's the struggles that a lot of the home birth practices, they think, well, I'm just going to be safe, keep my budget low, I'm going to do my own thing. And within 3 to 6 months, they're already looking for a partner. There's staffing crises all over the country for healthcare, but especially in private practice, home birth, birth center practices, trying to find a partner in crime. I mean, I can just go on and on about that's our number one conversations with consulting work, is staffing shortages, particularly a qualified midwife to help them.
For sure. I have a a CPM student who graduates in January, who I'm planning on adding to my practice as my partner. That's currently my business. I really wouldn't call it a struggle, but like what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah.
How that's going to work. Because right now my volume is fairly low. I think as of 2023, I think I'm going to wind up doing like 27 births. And so I think that's a good volume for me. But then to add another person in there and then still be able to pay myself and then pay a new person. But then again, I don't want to, this person really wants to be part of my practice, which I love because I love this person. I think they are a fantastic midwife. But then it's like, how am I going to be able to pay this person? And then, how does the pay structure work versus being the CNM owner versus this person coming in fresh new grad CPM? In a state, Southern West Virginia, but in a state that doesn't even offer CPM licensure. That's on our list of things for the legislature this year. We're going to try to push for CPM licensure. That's where I am business-wise of trying to navigate that whole new thing, because right now it's just kind of been me, and that's easy because I can do it however I want.
And that's part of those growing pains of like, everything's in your head. We talked about it a little earlier. Now you've got to add a partner. You've got to brain dump everything you've done on paper now as you're busy trying to train versus you could slowly be doing it. We've talked about with like bringing on a part-time per diem office manager receptionist, driving around and just getting like a recording app and tell, this is how I do a phone intake. This is what I want to create as a training manual. If someone is going to do this, this is how I do it. If I'm going to do a lab, I'm going to follow up. I'm going to collaborate. This is my thought process. Like, there's so much knowledge when you're solo doing your own thing. When you add a partner, you kind of have to like brain dump everything you've been doing on autopilot into something that other people can read and learn from. But as far as your questions on business partnership, there's a lot of different ways to do it. You could hire them as a W-2 and they get an hourly rate, they get productivity. W-2 1099, it's not a difference of how you pay them. It's the structure of how their identity is to your practice. So a W-2 is an employee. You're training them. You're typically giving them benefits of some kind. You're paying for certifications. You're telling them when to be there. You're micromanaging their day-to-day operations because they're directly under the umbrella of your company. Someone 1099, they're a mini business under your business. So you say, I need help with a midwife 2 days a week. They get to pick what 2 days a week. You don't get to say you're going to work Monday, Tuesday, 8 to 5. So that's where you have to be more careful with W-2 versus 1099. The tax structures are very different. I like to have practitioners and midwives as much as possible as 1099s with the businesses, because there's a lot of write-offs that the midwife gets to have with her own mini business under yours that she wouldn't get. W-2 employees get very little tax deductions. They just get the standard deductions everybody else gets. But then there's also, okay, so 1099, W-2, am I going to pay her hourly? Am I going to pay her a percentage of profits? Is she going to get productivity for her time, her visits? Like, what is that going to look like? And then you can start talking the direction of her being a business partner, but then you have to start talking, you have this established practice that has value. It's not that you both came in it from day one starting a new practice. What is the value of the business? How much is she going to be allowed to buy in at, and how is she going to pay for that? Like, there's a lot of layers. Business ownership and partnership is like a marriage. It's not all of a sudden you can say, oh, I don't like this anymore, let's stop dating. You've got to go through divorce. Like, I've had lots and lots of conversations with midwives, and they didn't have business operating agreements. They didn't have paperwork to structure that legal binding relationship well. And it didn't matter how much you love them and they were best friends. They all start out that way. And then something happens. There's growing pains. There's midwifery style differences. There's business scaling up style differences. And now that they didn't have anything in writing of how we handle this, it tends to get emotional and ugly. So definitely, Beth, when you're considering your student joining you, if you're going to lean towards the business partnership side, I would definitely get someone involved that's a little more of an expert to set up the right paperwork, and you both completely feel fair and it's a right buy-in structure for what you want.
Okay, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. So I guess I need to first sit and think about if I want this person to be a partner or if I want this person to be an employee.
And you could do it in stepping stones. Like, there's a lot of practices, especially traditional medical practices, where there's like already 3-4 doctors and there's a new grad that wants to join. They're in debt. They're a new grad. They're the same situation. What tends to happen is they get a discounted salary. Maybe they were going to get $100,000, $200,000. And every year they're only getting 3/4 of it because they're buying into their vesting period. Maybe they owe $300,000, $200,000 to buy into the practice. They maybe spend the first 2-3 years buying into their vesting period. So there's different ways you can hybrid it. You don't have to be 100%. And then if all of a sudden they say, I don't want it, you could say, okay, that was just part of a bonus that would have gave to you, or I've got to pay that to you because you didn't decide to buy in. That's part of your legal paperwork to do, but it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I just encourage, it's a lot to ask for a new student who's green and may not know exactly what they want yet. It's wise to do maybe the first 2 years is like a stepping stone of them being employed of some status into partnership.
Gotcha. Okay. I think that's what my mind was assuming that we were going to do. And not actually have them be a true quote unquote partner. I was just thinking of my second half, for when we rotate call and those sorts of things. Plus I know this person doesn't have the money to buy into a practice right now. And I don't
think average midwife doesn't. Yeah. I've never seen anybody honestly be able to just buy into what the value of whatever a third or 49% of it is. I have not once seen a midwife have that money sitting on the sidelines to buy. It's usually some sort of staged vesting period of earning that buy-in ratio of what that was.
Mm-hmm. What's the best way to value your practice? Is there a professional that does that?
I help a lot with that. So yes, you could definitely see us for it. You want people there's business valuation companies out there. The problem is the average one, they don't get midwifery. They don't know, like, there's a lot of value to certain components of what we do that isn't part of the traditional. So like your clients, your branding, if you have insurance contracts, you have certain accreditations, I can actually put financial value to those things because we look at it as, if someone else had to replicate this tomorrow, what would it cost them? And so we talk about the startup cost, all the things you've created and done, and what that value is. Obviously, a home birth practice is going to be lower than a birth center and real estate and more tangible assets, but we can definitely do it for you. The other simple way to do it, if you Google search like business valuations, it's more for practices that have been around for at least 5, 7, 10 years. You can take the average of the profits from the last 3 years and then just do a multiplier of like, okay, this place just made $1 million and I want her to buy a third of it. So usually you do that third amount times by three. So there's calculations that are very simple if it's a well-established practice doing the same thing all the time. But most midwife practices are newer and they're busy like this. You're not stagnant of always 666 clients a month. So the first year you may look like you're not making money. The second year it's good. And then the third year is amazing. If you do the profit sharing valuation, you're pulling from that first year because it was just a quick turn. So a lot of midwifery practices, we have to make custom valuations based on real time and where you are in your trends.
Gotcha.
So I know we got more into like an established practice, but these are important things to think of with a starting practice, your partnerships, your relationships. I mean, we are in a very unique occupation. It's very heavy female dominated and the personalities tend to be all very alpha dominant, passionate about what we do. And those sometimes as business partners in cohesive working cultures are a lot harder than the average business entity. So our team is actually working next fall on making a workplace culture for birth workers, like a tool and template. Because if you try to scale up and you're using the typical corporate things that are out there, they're not going to work so well for our organization. So always create win-win situations, whether it's your customers, it's collaborating, it's a potential partner, you're hiring somebody. Always, like you said, you were thinking about what would help her out, but you also need to be respectful of how hard you worked the last 3 years to get your practice to where it's at. Perfect. Any other great questions you ladies have? I know we're 1 minute over, but I'm more than happy to address any other questions you guys have. I appreciate you all being on today. Okay. Well, thanks. If you guys ever want, I have many consultants on the team. I lead and do kind of higher level cases, but we have Deidre, we have Kristen, we have Anita. We have so many specialties in all these different aspects of midwifery practices. You can set up a discovery call. You can talk one-on-one with any of us, and we would love to help. And you'd be shocked how many little nuanced niche things. It's pretty rare we can say we can't help with that. So definitely reach out if you want any support at all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, ladies.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Yep. Bye-bye.